This is the Biographics Podcast. I am your host, Simon Whistler. This is an audio version of a video that originally aired on our YouTube channel. Basically, this is just another way to get it in front of a new audience. I assume if you are a podcast listener, you probably prefer just listening to the audio of things. So that's why we have this. And as always, I'll say go leave us a review, do all of that good stuff wherever you get your podcasts, and let's roll into this episode. Friedrich Nietzsche was a 19th century philosopher who is most remembered for his killer quotes and incredibly large moustache. The main goal of his work was aimed to uncover the fact that there is no universal truth and that the human condition is in a constant state of overcoming our animalistic urges. He came up with many amazing quotes that we still use to this very day, including, "What doesn't kill me makes me stronger," and of course, "God is dead." While he is often misunderstood and his work has been used for the justification of evil over the past 100 years, the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche truly has changed the way that people in the 21st century live. And today in the video, we're going to talk about his life, his philosophy, and his legacy. Friedrich Nietzsche was born on October 15, 1844 in Saxony, Prussia, which is now a part of modern-day Germany. He just happened to be born on the same day as King Friedrich Wilhelm IV, which is why his parents decided to name him after their ruler. He grew up in a very strict Protestant family. His father was a priest, and his grandfather published books defending Lutheranism. His father contracted an excruciatingly painful brain disease that lasted for a full year before he finally died. Then, in 1849, Friedrich's younger brother Ludwig also died when he was only 2 years old. By the time he started going to kindergarten, Nietzsche had seen so much death and suffering in his young life that he was already a very serious person. He was nearsighted, and he got constant headaches from a condition called myopia. Therefore, he started wearing glasses as a young child. He looked and acted like a tiny professor who was far too grown up for childish games. Obviously, this didn't make him very popular with his classmates, and he did not make many friends. Most of his childhood was spent surrounded by women. His mother, his grandmother, and two aunts, they all shared in the responsibilities of raising him. In 1856, Friedrich Nietzsche, his sister Elizabeth, and his mother moved to their own house in Naumburg, Germany. That house would become the place where he would write his most important work, and the property has been preserved today as a museum. Nietzsche attended Christian prep school and later transferred to a boarding school. He never got particularly good grades, but his father had a state job before he passed away, which meant that he got a full scholarship to any college of his choice. He chose to study theology and philosophy at Bonn University. He originally wanted to become a priest like his father, but after just 2 semesters, he realized that his personal beliefs were in direct conflict with the theological curriculum, and he often got into arguments with his professors. He had to eventually transfer to the University of Leipzig, and he started studying ancient languages like Latin and Greek. As a student, Nietzsche contracted syphilis from a prostitute at a brothel, which made him physically weak and in constant pain for the rest of his life. Syphilis is also known for causing people to fall into madness, which ultimately did happen to him. At that time, there was no cure for syphilis. Today, it's treated with penicillin, but that would not be invented until 1923, significantly after his death. Nietzsche spent much of his free time listening to live performances of orchestras and operas. The music was so beautiful that it helped him to forget about his pain. He was particularly fascinated by the work of composer Richard Wagner, and he would pay to see each new performance 3 or 4 times in a row. He was completely inspired by the tragedy of the characters in Wagner's operas, and he eventually got to meet the composer. They became very good friends, and Richard Wagner was sort of like a father figure to Nietzsche. When he was 24 years old, he worked as a full-time professor of languages at the University of Basel. He taught for several years, even though he claimed that he was not all that happy in the classroom. He decided to volunteer his time as an orderly at the hospital after school. However, he ended up contracting dysentery and diphtheria from the patients. His health continued to decline so dramatically that he would sometimes end up bedridden for several days straight. He decided to retire from being a professor in his 30s and lived on a very modest pension. For Nietzsche, simply staying alive, it was a constant battle. He spent a great deal of time in bed with nothing to do, and he was always thinking about the meaning of life and humanity. This is when he began to write books on philosophy. Friedrich Nietzsche believed that there is no absolute truth, and that people should not have blind faith in their church or their political leaders. Today, this is kind of common sense, but back in the 1800s, people were raised that there were absolute right and wrong answers, and there was nothing in between. There was no gray. By telling people to inquire rather than just blindly accept something, he inspired future generations to completely change the way that we think. One of his most famous quotes, "God is dead," is used by atheists everywhere, but it's actually misunderstood and rather taken out of context. What he really said was, "God is dead, God remains dead, and we have killed him. How shall we comfort ourselves, the murderers of all murderers?" He wasn't celebrating the death of God, though. He was making a statement that more and more people were losing faith all the time, and he believed that without Christianity, mankind didn't know how to figure out right and wrong. Without the existence of religion, people often looked up to their political leaders and royal families with a sort of godlike reverence. He knew that people needed something else to take religion's place. He wanted people to embrace arts like music, literature, and theater instead, and he said that Shakespeare had just as much value to human morality as the Bible, without giving away people's ability to think for themselves. He believed that the rules of society were developed to keep people down and maintain the status quo. For example, in Christianity, it's taught that people should be like Jesus Christ and not have a desire for material things. Nietzsche believed that this is only taught to the poor in order to manipulate them to accept their station in life. If people are taught to feel shame for feeling envious of others and desiring more, they may not try to achieve a higher status. And therefore, if they're happy with less, they won't cause a revolution against their government in order to demand more. Nietzsche tells us to embrace our own selfish desires, and that the rules of society are something that need to be overcome in order to get to the real truth of our lives. Nietzsche believed that every individual person should be in the process of Selbstüberwindung, or self-overcoming. If we are envious of someone else, this is just a sign of what we really need in order to become our true selves. For example, if you feel envious of guys who look muscular, it's a sign that you should go to the gym. If you're jealous of someone who is rich, you should find a job that makes more money, etc. etc. Everyone has their own dream, and if we refuse to acknowledge these desires, we're only going to make ourselves miserable. And even if we fail to achieve these goals, at least we have the satisfaction of knowing we tried. Nietzsche said that if someone has succeeded in overcoming obstacles while also accepting their failures with grace, they have become an Übermensch, or Superman. He claimed that every man should aspire to become like this. He said that most people, they're stuck in between their animal instincts and the Übermensch, and there is a constant struggle between the two impulses. He was one of the first people to come up with the concept that ignorance is bliss, and that it's easy to be happy as a human if you just accept the status quo. He admits that the quest for knowledge and to become the Übermensch might make him miserable along the way, but it was a life that he chose to pursue nonetheless. Many people have read of this concept of Übermensch and misinterpreted it as to mean the ability to become someone who is superior to the rest of humanity. Others, like the Nazis, would see this as proof that certain races were more civilized and therefore more human than others. Even though Friedrich Nietzsche is a household name today, his work would not be translated into other languages until the 1890s, and by that point he was already too sick to enjoy his new popularity. So while his philosophy was well known in Germany, he wasn't exactly becoming rich and famous. In fact, his philosophy made him very unpopular, and it ruined his friendship with Richard Wagner. Wagner, indeed, thought that Nietzsche had gone mad. Nietzsche decided to isolate himself in the Swiss Alps, where he could spend a lot of time in nature. He often went on long walks thinking of nothing but philosophy, only to go home and write his ideas down, ready for his next book. He wrote several volumes of his ideas, and sometimes he got letters in the mail from fellow philosophers and people who wanted to be his friend. He met a psychoanalyst named Lou Andreas Salomi. When she read Nietzsche's work, she felt that his philosophy perfectly aligned with everything she had already been thinking. She was only 20 years old at that time, but Nietzsche considered her to be his protege. Lou was also trying to challenge the norms of society by experimenting to see if men and women can truly be friends without sex getting in the way of a relationship. In 1882, Nietzsche decided to go on a year-long vacation to Italy with Lou Andreas Salomi and their mutual friend Paul Rhee. Rhee was also a philosopher. The three friends wanted to buy an old monastery and start an academic commune together so that they could live in a society that was only filled with other like-minded intellectuals. Friedrich Nietzsche, he was excited, and he hoped that he could finally have a group of friends who understood him. But his family, they were totally against the idea. Indeed, his sister Elizabeth was always writing him letters telling him to stop trying to make a cult. There was also a bit of a love triangle going on, because Friedrich and Paul were both in love with Lou, and they were competing to win her heart. Paul proposed to her first, but she rejected him, saying that she liked him enough for them to live together, but more like brother and sister. She claimed that sex got in the way of thinking clearly, and she used Nietzsche's own philosophy, saying that society demands that women get married, but she personally wished to remain celibate and focus on her academic work. Even though he agreed to be friends, Friedrich Nietzsche was still only human, and the more he got to know her, the more he was falling in love. After all, Lou seemed to be the only woman on the planet who completely understood his life's work. He proposed to her, but she put him in the friend zone, just like Paul Rhee. In her defense, Nietzsche did have syphilis, and marrying him would have meant that she would have contracted the disease as well. But she continued to live with him, flirting, teasing, and leading him on. He remained hopeful that she would eventually come around, and he proposed to her two more times. No amount of intellectual reasoning could overcome his human desire. In this situation, it became way too uncomfortable for the three of them. His dream of starting a commune, it never happened, and Lou and Paul rode away on their horse-drawn carriage, leaving Friedrich behind. It's probably best that he got out of that situation, though, because she later broke up with Paul Rhee and married a man named Friedrich Karl Andreas. They apparently remained celibate throughout the entire course of their marriage. She actually did have sexual affairs, though, which is probably just a little bit hypocritical. She also had an emotional affair with none other than Sigmund Freud. It turns out that this was all one big experiment to her, and in 1910 she published a book called The Erotic, where we learn that she spent most of her life trying to analyze and document the differences between men and women when it came to sex. The relationship with Lou Andrea Salome completely traumatized Friedrich Nietzsche, and he never got married. He often wrote about love and how it can make the most logical person feel like they're going crazy. Instead of writing about his own life, though, Nietzsche expressed his feelings in a book called Thus Spoke Zarathustra. This is about a man who isolates himself in the mountains and finds all of the wisdom in the world, but he can't find any disciples to listen to or follow him. He then becomes the loneliest man in the world. Since he was rejecting Christianity, Nietzsche knew that mankind needed some sort of moral compass to live by. Therefore, he wrote Beyond Good and Evil and addressed all of the issues of what makes something good or bad. In 1888, he could feel his mind and his body betraying him. His last book was called The Antichrist, where he expressed his transvaluation of all values, where he was trying to come up with a set of rules for morality that could replace Christianity. He saw himself as a martyr who was making a sacrifice for the human race. In 1889, he was only 44 years old, and he had a nervous breakdown. He was triggered into hysteria when he was walking in the streets of Turin in Italy. He saw a man beating a horse with a whip, and he ran to the horse, hugged its neck to protect it, and he was sobbing and saying, "I understand you." His landlord, David Fino, had to usher him out of the street and get him back to his room. He spent the next 2 days laying on a couch in a catatonic state, so Fino arranged for him to get home to Basel in Germany. Even though they'd had a falling out, Richard Wagner and his wife, they were still his true friends. They were the ones who got him help and got him into a mental hospital. During one of the last moments where he was responsive, he started to sketch a picture of a man and a woman hugging one another in a long embrace before he slipped into a permanent catatonic state. It was almost as if he was trying to say that all of his philosophical work was nothing without someone to share it with, and that at the end of his life, love was the one thing that he truly wanted more than anything else. At the hospital, he was diagnosed with paralytic dementia, which was a direct result of his battle with syphilis, which had gone on for over 20 years. But many people also believe that the pressure he put on himself to find the answer to morality without God and to unravel the inner workings of the human condition is what ultimately made him go crazy. He slipped into madness and was unresponsive when people tried to speak to him. He eventually died in the year 1900. Soon after his death, Friedrich Nietzsche's work was being translated into multiple languages, and it began to inspire people everywhere. However, many people would read his work and completely misinterpret what he was trying to say. Even his sister, Elizabeth, who was a pseudo-Nazi, later republished a second edition of his books. She rewrote certain sections of his work to glorify the German race as being superior to the rest of the world. Because of this, Nietzsche has been blamed for starting not just one, but two world wars. Before World War I, even priests were preaching Nietzsche's philosophy at their pulpits, relating it to their own countries. This caused a great deal of national pride, especially in Germany. Adolf Hitler, he became a fan of Nietzsche, and he took this as a sign that the Germans were far more evolved than the rest of the human race. During the rise of the Third Reich in the 1930s, fascists often quoted Nietzsche, especially with his idea of the Übermensch. They wanted to make an entire race of supermen. Nietzsche's sister welcomed Adolf Hitler to the museum, where they posed together for a photograph next to the bust of Friedrich Nietzsche. Even today, many critics of Nietzsche's work consider his books to be too dangerous for young people to read. Since his main philosophy is to question everything, this can often manifest in acts of rebellion in teenagers. After all, if they question their teachers, parents, and government, they are more likely to lash out. Indeed, in 1924, this happened in the case of Leopold and Loeb. They were two college students in Chicago who thought they were smarter than everyone else and that they were the example of the Übermensch that Nietzsche was writing about. They believed that they could commit the perfect crime, so they murdered a 14-year-old boy. Their defense lawyer cited Nietzsche as the reason why they committed the murder. And yes, it's a ridiculous excuse, because plenty of people read Nietzsche and they don't become serial killers. But the jury, they bought it, and those two young men got away with murder because the jury considered Nietzsche's philosophy to be just that dangerous. Despite his criticisms, civilization of the 20th and 21st century has been completely changed by Nietzsche's teachings, and they continue to change things to this very day. Now it's very normal to think critically and question the world around us, and it's often the basis of a liberal arts education. As for those of us who do not go to church, we tend to learn about right and wrong from what we see on TV and in the movies. Whether we realize it or not, we are living in a very Nietzsche-esque world. It's just a shame that he didn't live to see it.
So I really hope you enjoyed that episode of the Biographics Podcast. Leave us a review. Why not? You can do that wherever you get your podcasts, or a rating, or however these things work. I like reading them. It makes me feel good when they're positive. It lets me know what you don't like when they're negative. Also, if you want to say hi, say let me know how I'm doing with this podcast, just drop me an email. It's simon@biographics.org. Biographics spelled the same way that the name of this podcast is spelled. So again, that's simon@biographics.org. Drop me an email, say hi, let me know how you like this podcast, and as always, I'll see you next time.